The producers.
The worst
is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine?
This is the Opie and Anthony Worst of the Week Countdown. The worst is coming up.
Come the day you're mine.
The virus on SiriusXM.
Our top story today, Andre Agassi, high on meth during his tennis career.
He's kicking his own ass.
Dude, it's 5 a.m. I'm getting a corn dog.
WPATFM.
Patterson, New York.
93.1.
Una estación de Raúl Alarcón.
93.1.
93.1.
The new love.
Amor. Hitting up the world with the Stern Show sound. From east to west, it's all around. Coming to you live, Studio 69. Pay attention, cause now is the time.
You're listening to The Howard Stern Show.
Yo, happy Father's Day.
Hey.
Even if you like to pretend the kids aren't yours.
Your kid just peed all over my kid's sandcastle.
That's the neighbor's. I'm gay.
Welcome to Burger King. Can I take your order?
Holy crap, you're Tony Stewart.
How you doing there, tough guy?
I'll be a lot better if you throw me an extra burger, you know what I'm saying, Tony Stewart?
Is that what you got there on the receipt?
No, but come on, you're Tony Stewart. Give me a burger.
It's my first day.
I don't care if it's your first day. It's going to be your last day. You don't give me a burger, Tony Stewart. Give me my burger, Tony Stewart.
Today's alternative music.
It's happening.
Sirius 21.
I can feel it.
Alt Nation.
So, obviously, Sirius, huge experience. What year did you depart, and did you depart for Merlin Media? Is that where this goes?
Yeah. You know, after a while, I needed something more. Sirius was a great learning experience, and I made a lot of friends there. Even met my wife there. And, you know, I'll tell anybody, you know, if you want to get really good in skills and all this stuff, you know, I don't have any animosity towards the place. It did a lot for me. But at some point, I needed to get out. Like, it was just time. You know how things, when things are done, things are done. And I just needed to move on. So when an opportunity presented itself, I took it. You know, I wasn't 100% sure about the format or what it was, but I knew some of the players involved. I didn't know all the players involved, but the few that I did know who were involved, I was thrilled about them. I was thrilled about them. So I saw this as a great way for me to start a new chapter in my life.
And how did you get connected then? What was the deal there? How did it all transpire?
There's a consultant by the name of Walter Sabo. He worked at Sirius for a long time. And he brought on, when Howard came on, Howard wanted Howard 100 News as a spoof, kind of like, a radio version of The Onion. And Liz Aiello was the news director for this format, for this news station, Howard 100 News. So those two people liked my work and loved working with me, and we got along, didn't want to kill each other very much. And they called me and said, listen, we're going to start this new company, and we want you to be the vice president of production for it.
And... So was that while you were still at Sirius?
Yeah. This is while I was still at Sirius. Yeah, I was still there. It was like May of 2011. May of 2011, sitting down having a steak dinner, and then he says, name your salary, which I was like, that's going to last, which of course was reined in later. Name your salary, and we want you to be vice president of production.
So tell me a little bit about that, because it was a huge undertaking. You know, I mean, obviously you were positive about it, but I guess I'm trying to ask in a nice way, how temporary or non-temporary did you think this new job in your career would be?
I knew probably within maybe the first week that this was not going to work for me. Mainly because, and it's not because of anybody or anything per se, equipment or whatever, or people or staff. This was the first time I'd ever taken a radio job where I did not like the format. I'm a young guy. I'm I pride myself on being edgy. Yep. and trendy and yep. I guess current, whatnot. And I watch the news, but I don't live the news. I don't live news.
Maybe I should give some extra details here just in case people have no idea. Merlin Media, It's a big deal. They buy, or I guess lease. Did they lease? I forget if they leased or bought, but two major, Chicago and New York at the same time, and then they also have Philly. Did that come at the same time?
Philly came a little bit later, yeah. Philly came maybe about 8 months later.
You're launching two major news talk stations in the two biggest markets, a format that's already filled with major players, and it's a format that you aren't necessarily too fond of. Those were the two stations, right? Or were there more you were having something to do with?
Oh, no, there was more. There was, there was the station here in New York, which was, the FM news station. And then there was the FM news station in Chicago. And then, and then I also had to image The Loop, which was in Chicago.
Oh, they already had The Loop at that point.
Yeah, okay. The Loop was already that. That was part of the deal. So it was those two stations in Chicago, and then it was an LMA, a local marketing agreement, with Emmis here in New York. So, you know, they still owned part of the stations, even though we were operating it. Yeah.
And so they named you the vice president of production. Did that mean that you were the entire department and you were imaging, doing all the production, or did you actually have a team underneath you?
There was a team underneath me. Like, I took care of the company as a whole, whatever the needs of the company needed, I took care of that. And then whatever needs specifically New York needed, I took care of that. But there was a commercial guy in Chicago, and there was an imaging guy in Chicago that, you know, we had meetings once a week just to talk about what was going on and what they're doing, just so there was, like, you know, a consistency standard across the board. But there was a team, but they weren't necessarily local, though. They were in Chicago.
Right. But you were in New York, so you've never left New York since you got out there in 04 or whatever you said it was. Now, you said within a week. I mean, everybody was excited, though. You know, nationally, radio nerds were looking at it and going, wow, that's a massive undertaking. And there's always a critic. You know, everyone's a critic. What were some of the things that you liked, but some of the things that you noticed were, like you said, within a week, like, ooh, I don't think this is going to last?
You know, I saw it as another challenge, too. I talk about how, you know, you can come in and how do you repurpose the same, you know, New Year's Eve promo or Halloween promo,
right,
whatever. You know, I knew that the news format was not for me. And then, you know, when they talk about female-centered news, that's even less me. You know, you've lost me even further. But I did see it as a challenge. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try this, you know, and I did image the piss out of it. I imaged it. I think I did image it pretty well and did cater to the demographic pretty well, to where I was pretty proud of it. It was pretty crazy because I took it on like, all right, I'm gonna make the best out of this, you know, and I'm gonna kick some ass on this. And I did. I was getting married that year, the day before my birthday. My birthday is on September 11th. I was getting married on September 10th. I had already imaged both stations. They had, you know, the stunt of the music to whatever. The stunt was over. Whatever the stunt was, it was over. There was a stunt that we did, and it was kind of lame. But it was over. And the stations were up, and there was a full coat of imaging, of real imaging, of the stuff that was going to stay on the station, of the stuff that what the station was going to sound like. And it got to the point where even Randy Michaels was like, oh, my God. I mean, people were calling me from Chicago that I didn't even know, that were doubting me. You know, they said, you see some kid, a kid amongst the guys who are as silvery as Randy Michaels. You know, they're going to be like, what the hell have you done? And really, who cares about what you've done? It's about, or where you've been. It's about what you can do right now. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
You know, especially in this industry, it's like the last thing you did is what I'm concerned about, not what you did 10 years ago. But, you know, they kind of looked at me, and I think I kind of knocked them out right before I left for my wedding. So that went on, and then we went, I got married and went away for my honeymoon for 2 weeks. And, you know, that was part of the deal. I was like, look, I'm going to get married regardless of this format or not. The wedding was planned before this job even came along. I came back, and it was like, you know, I don't know which critic woke up on the wrong side of the bed, whatever, but it was like the downward slope of Merlin began at that point. People were like freaking out, and they were like, you know, my God, we need more imaging. Like, I'll make all that imaging. But then they started changing it, and that's, you know, like I said, that was the downward slope of it. But I saw it as a challenge, and I saw it as a new type of format, because I, you know, at the risk of sounding arrogant, you know, I took on various formats at Sirius, and, you know, not crazy formats in Houston, but two different formats, you know, Hot AC and then Alternative. And I feel like I did a pretty damn good job doing it. Like, I am my own worst critic, and I'll tell you that I do make some stuff that sucks that some people say is really good, but I'll be really hard on myself. And I can honestly say that I think I did a pretty decent decent job, you know, more than most, with the formats that I had. And I was eager to try something different. And, you know, I got my wish. Here you are. It might not be the format you wanted, but you wanted something different. It was time for you to move on. Here's some news. And I feel like I did a really good way of blending the vibe of the station musically with a talk format. You know, it posed a challenge. Like, how do you, what's the sonic background of a station that has nothing but talk in it? And that's what they charged me with. And I did a pretty decent job to where people were telling me they were really blown away by it.
Now, I can't empathize with you more because the way I'm guessing is, no matter at a certain point, no matter what you did, there was one of the many cooks in the kitchen to tell you, no, it's not right. I'm assuming that at some point it started to become like an uphill battle that you figured you weren't going to succeed at.
No, it wasn't that.
No,
from my perspective, it wasn't that. What it was when I came back, the ratings weren't doing well. There was a bunch of criticism. You know, there was some, you know, New York is going to go up against WINS. So there was that battle with CBS, and Randy was all up in the news, and, you know, he was poking the giant. So when I came back, the initial awesomeness of the station sounding, the branding and all that, it had waned, you know, so everyone was ready for the next thing. And it didn't seem like there was any momentum. So there were content and sort of format adjustments that the production needed to reflect. So it wasn't that they were like, oh, your stuff is terrible. It's like, okay, well, that's cool. Now we want to do women's format, but now we're going to do, instead of 50-50, it's going to be 80-20 men. And we'll do 20% women. So now we need a little bit more rock in there. We need a heavier feel in the imaging. That was that type of stuff. So I was like, you know, I saw it as a challenge. Like, okay, cool. Now what am I putting in this? All right, well, let's go from Shania Twain to Rob Zombie here. Well, you know, let's see how that flows. You know, that type of stuff. So it wasn't really the, you know, them breathing down my throat. They, for the most part, you know, even though it was a crazy, crazy time in my life, they kind of let me do whatever I wanted to do. And, you know, I didn't go crazy, but I did what was, you know, necessary within reason.
So I want to ask I want to ask a billion things about that, but I don't want to, you know, we got to end the interview at some point. So before we move on to other things, I know it's a challenge and you wanted to be challenged and you wanted to move up and out of what you were at Sirius, but if it's a format you didn't like, I guess I'm asking, why did you even take the job?
Because nothing that's worth doing in this world is going to be easy. And if you don't take the risk, like, what's the point of life? If I didn't take that risk to come to New York, I wouldn't have worked for Stern. I wouldn't have met I wouldn't have met my wife. I wouldn't have the skills that I have now by staying in Houston. I might have been unemployed a long time ago. I took a chance and I went to New York all by myself. I took another.
Well, let me throw this at it, just from an outsider like me. It seems like the risk to go to Sirius in New York at that point was, you know, obvious. Like, to me, that was obvious. But to take the Merlin job, you know, that one doesn't seem as obvious to me. So that's why I'm curious if there were other things. Or did you see it as a jumping off point to something else, maybe?
No, I just saw it as another big change. You know, just because it's not the obvious change, you know, if things are 100% obvious, then they're never a gamble. And everything is a gamble as far as, you know, Sirius could have, you know, especially compared to what it was then versus now. I mean, if it hadn't done the things it did to be now, it could have gone away. I mean, I remember my programmer, the program director in Houston, the guy in Houston was telling me, he's like, are you crazy? That thing is never going to last. Do you think Stern's ever going to go to that? Do you think that's ever going to go off? That's ridiculous. That's so stupid. You know, and now look at it. So, you know, I figured this could be a very challenging experience, a very challenging opportunity that is going to have a lot of growing pains. But if it can work, then this could be really great for my career. If it doesn't work, then that's fine. I'll find something else. And and that's how it ended up working. You know, I actually, and I'm sure we'll get to that at some point, would do that all over again because of the spot that I'm in now. I would go through Merlin all over again to get to where I am now.
Yeah, no, I can't agree with you more. Every little thing you do leads to something else that then leads to, you know,
yeah.
So if you're happy, then you had to do all the stuff you
exactly.
did.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the times at Merlin were a little arduous and they were a little tough at times. And, you know, and I feel really bad for a lot of the talent, the on-air talent that left secure jobs for basically a life of uncertainty. And I feel terrible for them. But for me, it was like, you know, it got me to where I am now. It got me out of Sirius. It got me out of that hurdle. I paid a price of about 8 months of a really terrible job that a lot of people pay a lifetime for. So stop bitching, Jerry, and just deal with it and make the best out of what you got. And I, you know, picked up the pieces and I'm happier and I'm more creative than I've been, I guess, since Sirius 05. I mean, I'm making things now that I used to make at Sirius 05 that Sirius now would never play and that I would never have made if I hadn't come to this point, you know?
So Merlin, I think you just mentioned 8 months. Was that the total tenure of Merlin for you?
Yeah, that was the tenure of Merlin for me, 8 months.
So you leave Merlin, and I believe you told me, have you been completely independent since then, or did you actually go back to Sirius for a little bit?
No. Sirius at the time was still run by Mel Karmazin, and they have the policy of, you know, you're out. So that was that. And they made that very clear. They made that very clear to me that when you leave, you're done. And I was okay with that, and still am okay with that. And I needed that because, you know, that push also solidified that this is the ending of a relationship. It's like you're breaking up with someone, and now they're saying pretty harsh things. But then after a while, actually at the whole year, all of last year, as I was building up my side projects and my own business, Mel was talking about leaving, yada 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 yada. So now he's gone, and that ban has sort of been lifted. Some old employees, older people of past, have now returned. I don't want to name names or get into it, but some people now have returned that quit a long time ago. So I think there was maybe again, at the risk of sounding presumptuous and arrogant, maybe there was a slight hope that I would call and grovel and come back. But like I said, man, I'm done with that. I got what I got out of it. I'm very thankful. I never talk trash about them because, you know, they taught me an immense a shitload of stuff that I would never have learned on my own because of the environment, because they put you with other production people. And that sort of like creates like a weird sort of competition, but, you know, it fuels you. And then, you know, there's other formats and there's other sort of things and obstacles. It's cool. But after a while, it's like, you know, I don't need to have that many gray hairs. I'm good. It's time to move on.
It's a unique imaging dude's experience to have that many professional imaging people around you in one place. It doesn't exist anywhere else in America.
Yeah. And if it's, you know, if everyone's in a good mood, you can learn a lot from your fellow production people. I mean, you can learn a lot. And there are things that, like, I still talk to those guys because those guys, you know, there's like a camaraderie. At the end of the day, even though, you know, there's like an unsung competition, there is a camaraderie. It's like I still talk to those guys and I still hold them in high esteem, regardless of their skill level, because we work together, we sweat together, we bled together, that type of nonsense.
All right, man. So you're independent now. We already talked about the buzz in Houston. You're back doing that. We played some great audio from that at the very beginning. What did you go into? Was there any fear in your mind when you left Merlin? Were you a little financially stable at that point so you could be, quote unquote, unemployed for a while?
Yeah.
Or did you need to get to work immediately? How was your life at that point?
You know, like anybody who gets laid off, you know, it's a little devastating. It's a little shot to the ego. So there was a good few months where I just soaked my tears in brown alcohol from Tennessee. That was
right.
Fine. But that's to be expected. I had to really reassess. Like, we had enough money. Like, Merlin paid off a lot, and then the severance was good, and Sirius paid off well, which is also another reason why I took the risk, because I did, you know, it's a calculated risk. You know, there's a gamble in there. But I made the gamble so that if it blew up, how long and how could I stay afloat? And there was enough. It was fine. So I had time to sit around and wallow and mope and try to figure out the next step. And that's where the challenge came in, because, you know, what do you do? Do you drive back into an abusive relationship, or, you know, not serious, but radio in general? You know,
I get you.
You know, it's an abusive relationship where you work hard and it's not as rewarding or as it used to be. So I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't want to uproot the family that I have here now. I mean, we don't have any kids or anything, but I got married. We have a house. We have a mortgage, and I don't want to leave that to go to a smaller market now. You know, maybe back then when I was younger, then totally. I mean, before I got married, sure. But now things have changed. I'm growing up. I got hair in places I didn't have hair before. So I can't just leave. I gotta go to the right job.
That is
job.
The problem, though, with New York, right? I mean, you've gotten to the top of the mountain. Anywhere else, and you're taking a step down once
Dude.
You get there. So it's like a double-edged sword a little bit.
Let me just dispel any rumors to anybody listening. To all of you listening, just because it's market number one does not mean it's the best or the most creative. It does not mean that at all. I have heard the worst garbage on New York radio that you would not believe. Seriously, because by the time I got here and after the years that I spent here, you start to think that New York is number one. And then especially when I got here, I thought that too. And even though I worked for Sirius when I came up here in 2004, of course I listened to K-Rock. I wanted to hear the best and learn from that person doing it. And I heard some stuff that was like, it was good, whatever. And then after a while, you start listening, and then the years pass on and it's 2010 and you're like, God, radio in New York is just god awful. I mean, I know people who are just terrible at it. Granted, there are some really good guys, but I feel like the scales have tipped in the shittier person side. You know, there's a lot of corporate stuff out there now, and radio's become a very buttoned up sort of industry. So,
let me jump in. Quick side note, and I'm just curious, and you can answer real quick and move on to what you're about to say. The fact that New York is a union market, do you think that causes some of this that you were just discussing?
I think it causes some of that, but you can't tell me that there aren't any creative union guys. I mean, come on. You can't tell me that there aren't any creative union guys or any guys who can still do the job. I mean, I feel like, I work for The Buzz, like I said before, and The Buzz uses Frostbite, so every time I go on and do something for The Buzz, I'm on Frost's site, which, by the way, it feels good to be talking to Frost again. Like before, when I was working for The Buzz, I was having a conversation with him. I would submit stuff to Frostbites, and then when I got to Sirius, I had to stop because things got really busy and I couldn't really hang out as much. But there were a few times that the man himself would write me an email saying, yo, did you do this station? It sounds really great. And that was one of the biggest achievements in my career, having that guy write me out of nowhere just to tell me that. I forget where I was even saying what I was saying about that, how we get to that, but
no, that's all right. I totally jumped in. New York, not necessarily the best radio on the planet, and we shouldn't think that.
Yeah, it's just not. I just feel like, one of the things on Frost's website, it says, can there still be creative in radio, even though radio is the way it is now, and it's the banner on top of Frostbite as it's going by, and I see that and I'm like, I believe there is, and I still strive every single day to do stuff like that. Anybody can do noise assembly. It takes someone with some skill to write it and then execute it, and that's what I want to do. But I'm scared. I don't know if that's what is happening, if that's what's going on. So that's why, I decided to do, I have freelance. I still do the freelance thing, and I have a base, a nice chunky base of freelance coming in, but that's not what I'm focused on anymore. Like, I'm doing the voiceover thing professionally now. I got the agency out in L.A., just signed Disney Junior, and I'm doing another narration for a season of the show next year. So that's sort of taken off for me, and that's sort of paying a lot better than radio, and I can do all of it from my house without leaving. I was talking to the people at Disney in my underwear. Please, I hope they're not listening. But I was in my underwear. I wasn't doing anything in my underwear, but I was in my underwear. I haven't been to work in my underwear, just my underwear, in years.
Yeah, no, it usually that's, a once a week thing. Bob Iger does listen to the podcast, so sorry about that.
Oh, that's hi.
Do you think, because it happens so many times now, and more, where the imaging director jobs decrease, the actual creative jobs decrease on top of that, a lot of people are, I guess I'll do voiceovers. And do you think that was just kind of natural? Was it, where you would have gone anyway? Or was it sort of by necessity? And then, well, look at that. Jerry right here is actually good at it, How did that come about for you, and how do you feel about that?
It's really interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like everything, it happens for a reason. Like we talked about, if I hadn't made the gamble and came up to New York, I wouldn't have met this lady in 2009. Her name is Jonna Gottlieb. She is a voiceover coach, and she worked with a few people at Sirius, whatever, and she worked with this one dude. His name is AJ. He works over at Sirius still currently, and next thing you know— Yeah, yeah. Next thing you know, like, he's, like, you know, signed to an agency, and he's, like, doing stuff for TV, and, you know, and he gets a boy all excited, you know? So I'm like, I want to do that, too. What the hell? I'm doing all kinds of voices and skits myself, you know, for radio, and you think you can do that because you can do radio, but it actually is a completely different read altogether and completely different style. But, you know, I was, again, ignorant on the subject, something completely new, but was intrigued with the fact of it seeming to be very easy and very lucrative. So I was like, cool, let me go meet this lady that he met. So I met her in 2009 for 1 hour, for one session that she charged me for. And I felt like it was like a waste of time because I was like, ugh, you know, she told me things that I already knew, but I felt like she wanted me to come back for more sessions so that she could get the money. So I kind of just blew it off, like, whatever, lady. You know, I'll get to this when I can get to this. And I didn't really have the time or the energy because Sirius is a very, very consuming job. It really consumes you entirely. So that was 2009. Fast forward, I get laid off from Merlin. I write her an email because I was like, you know what? Now that I have the time to do this and we're not rushing for me to find a full-time job and we're not starving and I can take some time to do this, let me go through the actual process and meet this lady. I called her back and she remembered exactly who I was, what I said to her, what I read, and she knew exactly in my head what I was saying to myself, that I was like, this lady is full of shit, she just wants the money, da-da-da-da-da, all these things. And I was like, how'd you, you know, and I was speechless. I was speechless because she was absolutely right. And I was surprised that 3 years later, two and a half years later, she remembers exactly how it went down and what I was thinking as I was walking away. And she said, because yeah, you're really talented in that, and I think you could have I remember you. That's how good I think you are. So I said, well, listen, now that I got the time, you know, do you want to do this? And she said no. She said no because she's like, I think you're just wasting my time. And it took a little bit, but she finally came around and started working with me, and she helped me craft. She helped break me from radio. Like, there, yeah. I was surprised how arrogant and ignorant I was on the television voiceover world. Completely surprised at how much I didn't know and how much I thought I knew.
Yeah, and your worst enemy doing any read in anything that's not radio is radio.
Yeah.
That's your worst enemy.
Yeah, and then, you know, like a total a-hole, you know, I send her my demo, and it's got, like, this crunchy filter on it and everything, and she's like, what is this garbage? And I'm like, what do you mean? It's my voiceover demo. What are you talking about? This is what I would send out to radio stations, lady. And then she's like, no. We're going to have to start off from scratch. And, you know, it took a year. It took a year, and I gave her the benefit of the doubt, but she did take those sessions and that year and give me something tangible to which we submitted to agencies, and then I got scooped up, and then now I've got these two huge clients, and it's only getting better. You know, I feel like those things happen for a reason, man. Like, the way it played out is, you know, sometimes it gives me a chill down my spine. Like, I met that lady for 1 hour, and then 2.5 years later, she remembers me. And then a year after that, you know, I've got this great career going with that. And I'm so happy that it went down that way. You see what I mean? Like, these are the reasons why I would still do Merlin over, because it got me to this point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you needed something to do for 8 months, too.
Yeah, exactly. I was bored. I needed to hurt myself. I wanted to make myself feel bad.
Yeah, no. Nobody listening wouldn't understand why you'd take that. I mean, the vice president of production for a station that's doing lofty things. I mean, you know, they still could be, you know, I mean, a company, I'm sorry. They still could be great. Time will tell and how much patience they're going to have and whatever. But it's great to hear about that. So as far as, you know, people do like to hear sort of the details, no need to tell me actual dollars. But as far as your income goes now, you know, give me some percentages. You know, it used to be you were 100% radio imaging guy. Now, you know, of the income you make, is it 50-50 voiceover radio imaging production? Where are you at?
Oh, yeah. It's right now it's 50-50, but I'm back up to the salary I was making at Sirius, which was fine, you know. And however the split is, it's inconsequential. But this is a very interesting fact about the freelance world versus the creative world over at SiriusXM, or really any particular radio station. And those who are doing the freelancing can totally, you know, feel me on this. You know, I'll make a piece and whatever it is, whether it's voiceover music or just a bed or whatever, if it's the best piece or the worst piece, it has a dollar value. It has a dollar value. I remember making pieces for Clear Channel and for Sirius, killing myself, and then they're like, yeah, I don't know, maybe later. I'll have someone else try it, or I'm not feeling it. I make something now, and you're going to pay me for it. And that's how it is. And that's the arrangement forces the client, forces these stations to have their shit together. Just to have a thought process and not just throw something together and not revise it. You know, writing is rewriting, to quote the great Mitch Todd. but it forces them to write and rewrite and then get it to me. And then, you know, I have a structure in where, like, you know what? If you want a revision, I give you a revision free. But after that, it's $35 a hit. And there have been a few people who pay that price. But for the most part, they'll do that one revision and then never call me again for it. But I'll bill them for that piece and I'll get paid. And it's kind of a freeing sort of thing there, to where there's not the agony. There's not that, oh my God, I'm not good enough anymore. He took someone else's piece over mine, or he likes this promo better than mine, which Sirius can sometimes do. It makes you feel insecure if you're not one of the better ones.
It's like the writing staff on Saturday Night Live. I've heard it's just...
exactly.
It can be... can be not too fun sometimes.
Exactly, exactly. But it's a different environment on a freelance way. I mean, there is the uncertainty of not having it, of not having the check for, you know, 50 years. But I think that if you're good at what you do, you don't have to worry about that. If you're really good and you offer something that not anyone can give, I don't think I don't think you need to worry whether it's freelance or full time. They'll stay there if they want something good. Like, if I can get a really good sandwich, I mean, I don't care, you know, if it's $1.99 or $2, whatever. It's the same thing if I have to go one place to the other. It doesn't really matter. It's still good. It's still good, and I'll still pay for it.
Let me ask you a couple quick questions about freelance work for those that are in it or getting into it. Do you find that your clients are basically monthly with, you know, I doubt you have many of these, but just kind of unlimited crap for this much money a month? Are they all buying a la carte? Is it very limited deals? How are you working your freelance deals?
I structure it so that there's you know, because some people can't afford the full thing. I'll do it in packages of there's two sides. There's one where I'll be the VO and there's one where I won't be the VO. So if you have your own guy, that's fine, or your own girl, that's fine. But I'll do packages of 10 sweeps a month, 15 sweeps a month, and 20 sweeps a month. And each one has its own dollar value, you know, and it goes up, of course,
right.
You know, and then if you want my VO, then that just, you know, it hikes the price up even more. So, you know, it's all structured on how many pieces, you know, it's almost like a menu essentially. Yeah. It's all for the stations, you know, whatever their budget is per se.
Now, since stations are spending less and less money, they're having to fire their in-house people, and they do get, you know, outside people like yourselves or yourself or me, but are you also finding that stations are unwilling to pay for a level of creativity or skill that you're bringing, or is that still staying up there? Are stations still willing to pay for what they get, or are people also saying, you know what, screw it, I'll get the kid in Boise because I can't afford Jerry Rohier anyway and I don't need it to sound that good?
There are people that are like that. And there are people who are just like, you know, I'll do it myself. You know, that's just the nature of the beast, really. But there are people, and, you know, the fact that I'm not, you know, at the homeless shelter right now attests to that.
Do you use an agent for your radio imaging production gigs, or do you have your own business and you're operating all of that yourself?
I'm just operating that myself, you know.
That's good.
Yeah, that's fine.
As far as the imaging services go, Eddie Bauer actually brought this up, and I hadn't really had it put to me like this, but not just for the in-house imaging guy, but for really anyone that's involved in radio imaging production, you know, freelance guy like you or me or whatever, but the imaging services, do you agree or disagree that they're sort of killing the jobs of radio imaging people?
Look, see, I don't feel that that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, I see on a level where that can be misconstrued. Okay. But maybe if, you know, if stations have to go to a service site, maybe you're not that good. You know, I mean, it's almost like Louis C.K. said, you know, I get it that people with nut allergies, we should keep nuts away from them. But maybe if you were meant to die by touching a nut, you shouldn't be alive anyway. You know, I mean, maybe if the people around Station X are not good enough as Ryan Dreen's production service, then they shouldn't use those people and they should use Ryan Dreen's production service. So, I mean, I feel like it doesn't kill it. I don't think it kills it. As long as it keeps creativity flowing. It might kill jobs, but I would rather the jobs go to good people than just some Joe Schmo who's doing noise assembly. That's bullshit.
Right.
That's bullshit. that's another reason why people don't understand radio and think of us still as making commercials. It's all noise assembly. I would rather a production service over the lower half of the United States with John Frost than having 500 kids employed. Maybe because I'm a radio guy, and I'm not saying fuck the economy. Excuse me, screw the economy or whatever. But you know, I do love radio, and I still love creative stuff. Whether it's creative TV, creative songs, creative any movies, creative radio, whatever.
You're making a very good argument for the other side. I see exactly what you're saying, and there's something to be said with the tipping scale of, do you want a product that makes listeners come back for more, or do you want to employ people that don't have a very large skill set to do a job?
Do I want wallpaper, or do I want like something HD awesome that I'm going to remember when I go home? I mean, man, I remember the first time that someone called the buzz while I was actually board hopping on the weekend because I was waiting for someone to pick me up for beers later, and requested a promo. They didn't know that I was the one that made it, but they're like, yeah, that one for the concert thing? Play that. I'm like, what are you talking about? It was a promo. And I was like, holy shit, that is the coolest thing ever. That's never happened. And it happened a few times at Sirius. It doesn't happen very often. I can count how many times it's happened on one hand, but it was really, really cool. That's the stuff I'm talking about. If you make noise assembly, you're not doing that. Anybody can do. Family Guy makes fun of that. That pisses me off. Dingo and the Baby? You don't hear John Frost doing that. I'll never do that. Malcolm Riker's not going to do that. The good people who can write and execute are not going to do that.
But come on. I mean, that was a funny bit on Family Guy because it was true.
It was.
I mean, there's shitty radio. But Frost then took those bits and made some great stuff on Frostbites. And, it was twice as creative. And I absolutely hear what you're saying.
But the very fact that, 100%. I mean, the very fact that Family Guy, and I think that's the genius, side note of Family Guy, the very fact that they did that on radio imaging, I mean, it was genius because they knew the very next day almost every radio station that taped it's going to put that on the freaking air, and they're going to have more publicity and more branding. I mean, give me a freaking break. That was genius. It was genius. And of course Frost did that because it was awesome.
And aside, you know, like a third angle of the argument is the fact that Family Guy will take the time to rip on radio means there's plenty of people out there saying radio is not relevant anymore. Well, that's just a lie because radio is obviously still relevant because probably 99% of Family Guy viewers knew exactly what they were ripping on and why.
That's true.
So it's a big circle, but
I agree with you there. And you know what? That would make me feel better if that in fact is true, because the relevance of radio, it's been on all of our minds. I mean, you know, you have lunch with a radio buddy, and that's the first thing you're going to talk about. And I like to think, and I like to hope that as the internet rolls out in cars, and it's way easier for people to access the internet hands free, safely, and still drive a motor vehicle without getting into an accident, I'd like to think that the accessibility of having internet radio stations will maybe be the second coming of radio. But that is going to take a whole lot of time.
Yeah, it will. And what won't is when radio, the product, becomes worse than online radio stations. I mean, online radio stations suck. I don't care who you are. Listen to one. The segs are terrible. The music quality's terrible. They have, amateurs running radio stations, but they're free and they're easy to get to. So as long as radio terrestrial keeps our product better, then when you can stream radio in your car, you're going to stream terrestrial stations just from other cities. They're going to stream the best product.
And besides the streams, I mean, how do you compete with iPods, I understand the whole radio thing, but what my playlist is better than your playlist. And if you don't like it, well, screw you. I'll put on my headphones and disappear.
Nah, I tell you, my argument against that is there's still a humongous portion of the population that want, not just likes, but wants to be programmed to. I'm one of them, but I'm different. But there's plenty of people that they don't want to have to figure out what songs to hear. They don't want to have to go out and search out.
That's like an older generation, though, man. That's an older generation. Nowadays, they want everything themselves, don't you think? I mean, I think that in you give it another generation, and no one's gonna want their own, or no one's gonna want to, or I mean, really, those people might just wane out. I don't know. I feel like kids nowadays are big vaginas who like to get bullied and who get bullied and then, want to go into the corner and put on makeup and listen to their sad music.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that the young people are trending to not even, you know, they want their music for free. They go and download it illegally for free, but they'll stop doing that once the things that play the music for them will do it right, because then they don't have to take the time to go hunt down an MP3 and download the thing.
What I mean, it would be cool. Like, you know, I would listen to iHeart just so I could listen to the buzz or whatever, but it would be cool if one day if they could somehow have the stream, you know, just reach better, because there are times that I would prefer to listen to iHeart because I can't get local radio on my iPhone. I'll listen to iHeart and I won't be able to get it because I don't have a service or I'm not in a certain area. Like if we can put towers on the subways or, you know, in places where you're underground or whatever, just stronger signals, then maybe that would be even cooler for me. But if I hit underground, like I'm in the subway here in New York and I can't get the radio, I'm going straight to my iPhone, you know?
That's true. And I think that as the connection gets better, you know, 4G will continue to get more wide, but also Wi-Fi will eventually blanket the country, eventually, within, I don't know how long, 5, 10, 15 years, eventually you'll be able to get a signal everywhere. It'll be ubiquitous. And your radio just needs to be putting out the product. Yeah, and then someone like you won't even need to waste time downloading the music because you're going to go in the subway. You know, now it's you can just count on your online. Yeah. Once that happens, radio still better have a good product by that point. Otherwise, they'll be left for dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, man, it's great chatting with you about this stuff.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on, dude. This is really cool.
Yeah. There's 30 or 40 other things I wanted to get to, but it's been over an hour, and you've got to do your Bob Iger work. So I appreciate you being on the podcast. Let's tell people how to find you. JerryRohira.com, JerryRohira.com. Your Twitter name, is that Kabong?
Yeah, there was a that's actually kind of a funny story. There's the imaging guys out there. Of course, when I got to Sirius in 2005, you know, I was like, I want to be a cool imaging guy too. Like, there's some guys named Flesh and Burn and Maim and Scorch or whatever. So I was like, I want to be something cool like that too. So I was looking up cartoons, and I love cartoons, and El Kabong, you know, the horse, Quick Draw McGraw's secret identity, or his secret superhero guy, you know, swinging from a rope dangling in midair, you know, across the screen or whatever. And he would say, Kabong, and smack people on the head. So I started calling myself El Kabong at the radio station, and I would sign my name that, and everything was ridiculous. Anyway, so Kabong was taken on Twitter, so I had to change the spelling. Now it looks like, you know, bong as in like smoking a bong.
Yeah. It's KUHBONG, at KUHBONG. People can follow you on Twitter. What else? Anywhere else you want to direct people?
No, man, check it out on LinkedIn, too. Check it out, Jerry right here on LinkedIn, and hit me up. And, you know, if you want to have some cool stuff on your station, give me a shout.
Yeah. The guy's 100% freelance, ready to work. You got your fancy New York studios. Is that a picture of your studio on your website? Or do you go get a generic one and put it on?
Yes, it is. It is nice. The studio.
That's cool. Are you in Jersey? Are you in upstate? Where are you at?
I am right across the water from Manhattan on the Jersey side. When I decided to buy my place, I wanted to, you know, coming from Houston, I want the amenities and the cleanliness of Houston. Yeah. And if you live in New York, you're going to get the old school pre-war, you know, things are falling apart. But that's the charm of New York. And yeah, that's cool and all, but I didn't want that. So I bought on the other side of the water, but I got a great view of the city, get to the city in 5 minutes, and it's the best
like
of
Hoboken, or
the best of both worlds, right south of Hoboken, Jersey City, right south on the waterfront.
Jersey City.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. Right on, man. Thanks so much, dude. We'll keep in touch for sure. And if you do fun stuff, I hope you send it to me. I'll feature you on the site anytime.
Cool, man. I appreciate
it. Talented guy.
Thanks so much, Ryan. You rock, dude.
The producers.
All right. Thanks one more time to Jerry. I thought it was a pretty cool interview. Highly energetic dude, and is not afraid to speak his mind. I like getting a little back and forth about the radio business. And it's one of those topics that really no matter what you say, you're going to have people agree with you. You're also most likely going to have people disagree with you, which I know 100% after doing this podcast over the years now. Anyway, thanks to Jerry. If you want to check out more about him, as I mentioned in the show, JerryRohira.com, cool website. He has lots of his content posted there. And of course, if you would like to hire him, you can do that as well. But you can also hear what he's doing. And then his Twitter name is Kabong, at KUHBONG. Kabong is Jerry Rohira on Twitter. Real quick, coming up, if you didn't hear the part one intro, just to recap what's heading our way on the podcast. Up next will be Mike Madrigal, a guy I've wanted to talk to for a while now. I got to meet him, as I mentioned, a while back in L.A. Really nice guy, really talented, but also has, on the business side of things, become a major player in the world of radio imaging as one of the co-owners and CFO of Short Bus Radio. Most likely, if you're listening to me, then you are well aware of what Short Bus is. They're in many formats, multiple countries, hundreds of stations, a great imaging service. Looking forward to talking to Mike. And I know he's one of these guys that isn't going to pull any punches. He'll be a guy that I can talk to about anything and get lots of good opinions from. Let's see here. I mentioned in the past, John Carter, hugely successful voiceover talent in the world of radio imaging and commercial. I look up to him personally for his style and just the way he operates, and just a really nice guy. So we'll get some time etched out with him at some point. Another voiceover talent that I talked to, well, actually, I've probably brought him up on the website in the past for multiple reasons. Big into gear, big into all the tools of the trade. He's a voiceover talent, hugely successful, based out of New York, Mike Bratton. If you haven't heard the name, you've most likely heard his voice at some point. But we've had some cool discussions via email. Again, a busy guy, but he's coming up soon on the podcast as well. One more thing I wanted to mention, really just say thanks again to Rick Allen, who with Sample Logic, at Rick Allen Create, C-R-E, the number 8 on Twitter, or of course at Sample Logic. Rick created a brand new radio imaging virtual instrument through the contact engine called Assault. If you had happened upon my site in the last month or so, then you're aware of it. I was able to coerce them into giving me one to give away. It was maybe not literally the most visited thing on my website, but it had to be top 5. Hundreds of people came to check it out, and probably around 200 entered the contest. And we did a random drawing. I actually had somebody else here in the building randomly pick, and our winner was from Twitter. Oh, I should absolutely remember his name. I will pause. Michael Ormond, congratulations. Actually, really talented music producer. You should check out his stuff. Anyway, contest page, the winner on my website, Assault. You can hear Michael's stuff. You can hear and read and see everything about Assault, the product. Hook up with Rick Allen, and again, thanks to Rick and Sample Logic for letting me give that away. We'll try and do more of those in the future. Have lots of products that I get, you know, cool imaging products as well, libraries, buyouts, barter stuff. You can see, I usually, you know, if people want to get featured on my site, I make them give some sort of crazy large discount, and everybody's happy. So that should do it. I think I've yapped and yammered on about everything I wanted to. Just looking at my notes real fast. Yes, okay. Thanks again for checking it out. Until next time, bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.